Okay, so we are holding on Nunvolve Omidbase about three quarters of the way down the arm of the line against Nami. Okay. We started talking yesterday about the mission I mentioned that I know doesn't apply to Kauka, as well as a number of other things, Avodim, Meshtaris, Hektish. So the last thing we talked about was Reb Zera had asked whether it applies to Schirus, and we said that yes, it does. As long as it's not Schirus Karka, obviously, because then that would be the same as regular Karka. So, Boy Rava. Rava asked the question as follows. Chitin v'zoran b'karka mahu. What if you have wheat that you planted in the ground? What would be the din about it? Now, what's the question? The Rambam says we're talking about, for example, that you're talking about you hired somebody to plant wheat, and as the Gemara is going to say, he didn't plant as much as he was supposed to. Would there be a null involved over there if he's claiming that he paid that he planted more than he actually did as far as his wages? Most of the other Rishonim have a problem with that, and the Noitz Kalim on the Rambam also have a problem with that because that's not really the same thing. That's not a null. That would be Mekach Tos, as the Gemara is going to talk about later. So therefore, they talk about other possibilities. Rashi over here said,
I lost the flow. What's happening?
So Robert just says chitin v'zoran b'kar kamahu. What happens? Wheat that was planted in the ground. What would be the din about it? Now, what do we mean by what is the case that we're dealing with? I know.
Right.
So I'm saying that Rambam says we're talking about, for example, you hired a worker to plant wheat, and he claims he planted X amount, and in the end, it turns out that he planted less than that. However, again, most of the other Rishonim argue with that. Rashi says
he should have paid him, right.
Yeah. Rashi, on the other hand, says, yesh lahem ayna, im mochron, if he sold them, which leads to a few different explanations what that may mean. It may mean, for example, that you sold the field together with the wheat that's already planted, and the question would be whether the wheat is maybe considered a separate thing, or it could be maybe you didn't sell the field, but you sold the wheat. The other person bought the wheat intending, okay, you already planted it. There's eventually going to grow a crop from it. If it turns out that less was planted than expected,
but yeah, well, if that's the case, then it returns, it reverts to the stamped case or not.
Well, that's what we have to figure out. Is this wheat, which is now in the ground, is it considered part of the karka or not? Yesh laimana or in laimana. The question is, command shadyan b'kada damyan, do we consider that wheat as if, since it hasn't actually taken root yet? But it's not. It hasn't really taken root yet. It's only just been planted. Maybe we should consider it as if it's still in the jar. And therefore, v'yeshlein ano, therefore it's just like any other metoplin, ano would apply to it. Aduma baplinu agav ara. Or maybe once you planted them in the ground, they're bottled to the ground, even though they haven't germinated yet, even though they haven't taken root yet, maybe they're already bottled to the ground. Okay, the Gemara
could be both. I mean, those that are bottle, and those that are growing are growing.
Fine, but we're talking about the ones that haven't. You just planted them yesterday. They haven't taken root yet. It's a known thing in the Gemara that in various places, including in the Sefer Rosh Hashanah, it takes a certain amount of time for seeds to take root and start growing. 3 days, 14 days, or a month, different opinions, but whatever.
Rosh Hashanah.
Okay. It's in Rosh Hashanah, in connection. Indeed, yes.
Okay.
So the Gemara asks, Hey Chidami, what is the scenario over here? Ilema de'omer iu shadai bashita. Are we talking about that the one person, let's say so the seller says, for example, if we go with Rashi and most of the other Rishonim that we're talking about, that these chitim are being sold, either with the karka or without it. So if it's that he says, I planted six measures of grain there, and witnesses come and say that no, in fact, he only planted five measures, five saw. Well then, okay, so you're asking whether there's a nah. What's the question? Didn't Rava himself say, okay, down the side here it says Rava, but still, fine, it's an established din, that called anything that involves a measure or weight or number, even if the amount of difference is less than the amount of a nah, less than 1/6, you can still retract it, because the whole concept of a nah is, for example, as we've learned earlier in the perek, is you have something where the quantity of it is known, but you sold it for more than it's supposed to be, or you paid for it less than it was supposed to be, as the case may be.
That's not the answer to our question.
No, wait. The point is, like this. If you're talking about, so in other words, so if I sell you, for example, if I sell you a bottle of seltzer, which is supposed to be worth, a dollar, and instead I sell it for $1.20, then we can talk about a nub, bitul mekach, whatever. But if I tell you that I'm selling you a dozen bottles of seltzer, and instead it turns out there's only 11 in there, even though that's less than shtut, that's not a question of a nub. That's mekach tos. That's, you intended to buy 12, and I sold you only 11.
Yeah.
So therefore, even if it's less than kedei na achoyz. So therefore, what's the question? Yesh I na or ain I na? It's not a question. You can't really talk about it in terms of a na if we're talking about that factually he planted less than he's claiming he planted. So I'm claiming, for example, I'm selling you, let's say, a field that has 6 saw of grain planted in it, and now Adam can come and say it's a field that has only 5 saw of grain planted in it. There's nothing to talk about a na. That's obviously the mekach tos.
That's the point.
It's not a question of a na in that case, regardless whether it's more, less, equal than a shtus. Once you're talking about something which you're weighing or measuring, regular case of a na, papas mishtus, we said before in the past.
It's more than a shtus, but both parties agree to it.
If they both agree to it, fine. We learned earlier in the parak that if a person, the person says to the other, I'm selling you this, I'm not, that you're not going to make a claim of Aina against me, then it's valid, yeah.
If someone says that, beware.
Well, it's a clue, but anyway. Okay. Ella, no, the case has to be like this. Suppose that he says, I planted this field, the appropriate amount. He didn't mention an actual amount that he planted. He just said, this field is meant to have a certain amount planted in it. I planted it the way it's supposed to be. Then it turns out that he did not, in fact, plant as much as he was supposed to. Since there's no actual measurement mentioned, there's no 6 saw versus 5 saw or whatever, you can talk about, then it's relevant to talk about the question of Aina. Again, according to the Rambam, you're talking about you hired a worker to plant it. He planted less than he was supposed to. But you're selling it right now. The question that according to the Rambam, you're talking about a hired worker. According to everybody else, you're talking about selling it. So that's the question. In other words, like this is the equivalent of saying that I'm selling something of an indeterminate amount, but because at the time of the sale, it's not determinable how much is in there, and you're buying it as it is basically, and it turns out you were overcharged because it turns out less was planted in there than was supposed to be. Therefore, we have a question whether it's Aina or not. Again, if it's karka, if you say they're bottled for the karka, fine, it may very well be Aina, but tough luck. Aina doesn't apply to karka, as we will rediscuss soon in the Gemara. But if
wouldn't
you say...
Wouldn't fall into the category of gezel?
We're not saying that it would be the right thing to do. There's no question. There's no question, and I think the Shittim HaKabethis actually says that even if you say that Aina doesn't apply to karka, there's no question it's still a form of gezel, at least, the fact that you're overcharging for something. But we're talking about, as far as the technical dinim of Aina that we talked about earlier in the perek, nikne mekach, and then you have to reimburse it, or bitul mekach, or et cetera. Does that apply in this case? That's the question. So that's the question. Yesh lam Aina, or in lam Aina. So we're back to the question, this wheat, does Aina apply to it or not? As far as paying the worker according to the Rambam, or as far as the sale, as far as refunding the overcharge or whatever according to everybody else.
And let me ask you a parallel question. Let's say you planted wheat A, which is low quality, and wheat B, which is high quality, and you say it's wheat A.
That would be mekach tos. That would be mekach tos because you're saying that you planted a certain kind and it's not. That's mekach tos. That's the equivalent of saying I'm selling you. That's the equivalent of saying I'm selling you wheat and instead I give you barley.
Or I'm giving you gold.
Or I'm giving you, whatever.
So,
that's the difference. There's a difference between the actual object itself being the wrong one or the wrong amount or whatever versus overcharging. Okay, that's the question. Commander Shadi Bakadadamian, do we say that this wheat is, since it hasn't germinated yet, since it hasn't rooted in the ground yet, it's still as if it was in a jar? The yesh lam Aina, therefore it would be like any other metalplin and Aina applies it. A joma batlinu agabara. Or maybe, once you put them in the ground, they're already bottle agav the land. Another question we can ask, nishboin alein or in nishboin alein. What about another case? What about a case of moediv mikvah, let's say? So, for example, Rashi says, let's say, that the Reuven claims that you made up with me that I gave you six saws of wheat, which you were supposed to, which the agreement was you're going to plant them. You only planted five of them, therefore you owe me for the extra saw that you didn't plant. And he counterclaims and says, I planted five and a half. So it's a case of murder of mitzvahs. Would he have to swear I'm not hoidah b'mitzvahs or not? Same question. Do we consider this wheat, since it hasn't germinated yet, as if it's still in the jar? So it's like any metalplin, it's like any case of motive mixus in metalplin, and therefore you have to swear, or maybe again, the same thing, maybe it's bottle for the ground, and therefore you wouldn't swear on it. And a third question, what about after this wheat was planted? After this wheat was planted, and at this point the Gemara is assuming that we're talking about the wheat finally started to grow, would the Omer be, once you bring the carbon to Omer, we know any wheat that was planted before the carbon, any wheat that started sprouting before the carbon to Omer is brought, becomes mutter to eat once it's harvested, as opposed to anything which had not yet started sprouting, which had not taken root before the Omer is brought, has to wait till next year. It's still Chodosh for the entire next year, till next year's Omer is brought. So in this case, once you bring the Omer that year, or nowadays there's no Omer, once the 16th of Nisan passes, are you allowed to eat it or not? So that's the last one. The Gemara says, wait, hey Chidomi, what's the scenario over here? Id Ashrish Tanena, Id Loy Ashrish Tanena. We have Mishnayos in Masechta Menachos where it discusses the Dinim of Chodosh that discussed both of those possibilities, whether it already took root before the Omer was brought or whether it didn't. What is Rava asking a question when you have Beferish and Mishnayos? It's not, as we learn in the Mishnah, in Mishrishu Kodim L'Omer Omer Matiron, we say that if wheat or any other grain was planted and it took root before the Omer was brought, so let's say, for example, according to the opinion, we accepted La'alacha that it takes 2 weeks for it to get rooted, it would mean you had to have planted it before Beis Nissen,
right?
2 weeks before. So if it took root before the Omer Matiron, then good. The Omer is Matiret for that year. So when you harvest it later in the year, you'll be able to eat it. Vim lab, asurin at yuva Omer abba. And if not, then you have to wait till the following year's Omer. So what's Rava's question? The answer is lo tzricha, no. The case we're talking about over here is like this. Dechatzdinu. Suppose that we're talking a little bit differently than the previous cases. We're talking about you harvested grain that was chadash before the Omer was brought. So let's say you planted wheat. Let's say, for example, sometime in the summer. You harvested it during the following fall or winter before the Omer was brought. So it's still chadash. Then v'zarinu kodim la'omer. Now you took that grain which you harvested before it became mutter from the omer. You planted grain from that harvest before the following omer. V'asalei omer v'cholafi levayu. Now the omer came and passed after you planted those. V'loy ashrish kodim la'omer. However, those new plantings had not taken root yet before the omer. So you planted it in the summer. You harvested it sometime in Adar, let's say. Then you took some of those seeds, some of those grains after Beis Nissen and planted them. But after Beis and before Tet Zayin Nissen and planted them. So now comes Tet Zayin Nissen and they're in the ground. So if you hadn't planted them yet, no question, they'd be mutter because that's how it works. Once Tet Zayin Nissen comes. Once the Omer is brought, that's it. They become mutter. Here they're in the ground at the time, and they haven't yet taken root. You have the question. Mahu l'minkat r'meichu minayu. Would he now be allowed to go and take out those seeds from the ground where he had already planted them and take them out and eat them? On the one hand, do we have to ask, Commander Shadyan Bekada Dami? On the one hand, we could argue that since they haven't taken root yet, they are still considered like they're in a jar, the Sharinu Omer, and therefore the Omer is mapped to them as if they hadn't been planted at all. Or maybe not. Maybe by replanting them, maybe already, even before they take root, he was already mevatel them, agav the land. Therefore, anything that grows from them is now going to end up being, therefore the seeds themselves are now osur. Until the next year's Omer. And obviously anything that grows from them is also going to be also until the growth actually, Rashi says, we don't even have to ask about the growth. So obviously anything that grows from these now is going to be also until the next year's Omer. The question is about the seeds themselves before anything starts growing from them. And the answer to all three questions is Teku.
Well, that's on, the Teiku goes on the Sugiyo Kadosh.
It goes on all three of them, actually.
It goes on
everything. And it goes on all three of these questions.
Because of Chodesh, it goes on the other.
The fact is, we don't have an answer to any of these questions.
Yeah.
So in the case of Chodesh, you're indeed not allowed to eat them, although you wouldn't get Malkus because it's only a Sopik Isser. And in the case of Nishborin Alein, you can't be made to swear on them because it's a Sopik, whether it's a Taina and Kafka. And in the case of Aina, it's a Sopik, whether it's a Sopik, whether it's Aina or not. So the other guy is not going to have a recourse.
Right.
Okay. Omar Rava. Rava says, new topic. Omar Rav Chassa. That Rav Chassa said as follows. Boy Rav Ami, that Rav Ami asked the question as follows. We say in the Mishnah that Aina doesn't apply to Karka and Avodim and so on and so forth. The question is, Aina Ein Lahem. Fine. It's a given that the din of Aina doesn't apply to them. However, Bittul Mekah Yesh Lahem Ein Lahem. What about the concept of Bittul Mekah? That we learned earlier in the parak, that if you're overcharged by more than 1/6, then the other guy has the ability to have the sale completely voided. Not just in the case of Shtus, we said, it's Kono Maxo Eino. He is Kono the thing, however, you have to refund him the overcharge. We said Yosef Shtus is with Bittul Mekach. The other guy, the one who was defrauded, has the ability to cancel the whole sale and get everything back, all his money back, and return the. Exactly. All these things. That's the question. We're saying that I know it doesn't apply to them. What about Bittul Mekach? What about if you're overcharged by more than 1/6? Omer Rav Nachman, Hada Omer Rav Chassa. So then Rav Nachman said, you should know that then Rav Chassa furthermore said, Poshet Rav Ami, that after Rav Ami asked the question, Rav Ami later on himself answered it. I know Ein Lahem Bittul Mekach Yesh Lahem. That as a matter of fact, yes, there would be that distinction. When we say in the Mishnah, I know it doesn't apply to them, it means if you're overcharged by exactly 1/6. But Bittul Mekach, if you're overcharged by more than that, that would apply to them.
How did you know that?
Because the Mishnah only mentions Aina. Now, with that said, it's not so simple. Tosfos points out over here
Bittul Mekach, it should have Aina. Because how can you have one without the other?
Because you could. Aina means if it's exactly 1/6. Bittul Mekach is if it's more than that. Good, okay. So then it's two different
dinim. In principle, if you have one,
no,
you should have the other.
Not necessarily. No. Okay. Now, Tosfos over here mentions on the basis of a Gemara later on in Armasechta that says that actually when we say Bittul Mekach over here, we don't necessarily mean more than 1/6. We mean if you're overcharged by 100%. Meaning, in other words, if you have Karka that was supposed to be worth 100 and you sold it for 200 or more than 200, that is when we would apply Bittul Mekach. We don't mean, in other words, for Karka, in other words, Tosfos says the critical fraction is not a Shtus, is not 1/6 like it is for Metaltalin, but there is still a point at which Bittul Mekach applies, and that is if you're overcharged by more by an amount equal to or more than the value of the Karka.
There would have a lot of transactions in Kranach that would be cancelled check on that
basis. Well, now, on the other hand, the Rambam says not. The Rambam says that based on that, the Rambam learns, based on that same Gemara later on in the Masechta, that actually it's Rav Nachman over there who says, Ein Aina L'Kakos, and we take the view that the Halacha is like Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman over here says that Rav Chassa said that Rav Ami gave the answer. Fine, we would say Rav Nachman quoted Rav Chassa saying that in the name of Rav Ami. Not necessarily does he have to agree to that. He himself might say there's no Bittul Mekach even for Karka at all, no matter how much you overcharged for it.
That's how.
The Halacha in Shulchan Aruch, it brings both opinions.
So what's the Halacha?
It depends. It's like any other Machlokas Rishonim. It's like any other Machlokas Rishonim.
If you have 600 that's worth 300, what's the deal?
You have to go to you go to a Rav, and depending whether the Rav can paskin like the Rav can paskin like the Rambam, if there's no Aina and no Bittul, that there's no Aina, for sure there's no Aina, we say over here in our Gemara, but also no Bittul Mekach, or he may paskin like Tosfos, which the Ramah brings, that there is Bittul Mekach for if you overcharge by more than the value.
So what case would be judged by like Tosfos as opposed to the Rambam? What would be the difference between the two cases?
It's two different opinions, that's all. I mean,
on the same exact case.
We have many cases where Rishonim argue like that. We don't have any higher authority than the Rishonim to be able to decide. because among the Rishonim themselves, it's already after the Simit Gemara, you don't have any final authority to give an answer. So, yeah. Okay. Okay. Rav Yonah Amar HaHekdeshes. Now, Rav Yonah furthermore says this discussion that we're talking about, whether there is Bitul Mekach or not, applied to when the Mishnah said that Aino doesn't apply to Hekdesh, that Rav Yonah is saying this. Rav Yonah is saying this that we're saying that Aino Ein Lahan Bitul Mekach Yesh Lahem is applies to Hekdesh. Rav Yonah Amar HaKakos. Rav Yonah says that it applies to Kauka that I mentioned in our Mishnah. Both of them say in the name of Rabbi Yochanan what Rabbi Ami said, that indeed Bitul Mekach does apply to Kauka or Hekdesh, as the case may be. Again, according to Tosfos, that remains Lamaskana as well. There is a concept of Bitul Mekach when it comes to Kauka, and according to the Rambam, it's overridden by the Gemara later on, where Rabbi Nachman says this.
We said that the Allah is like the Achorim, that we said that the Rambam came before.
The Rambam and Tosfos are contemporary. But whatever, they're all Rishonim. They're all Rishonim. Within Rishonim itself, you know. Within Rishonim themselves, you know. Manda Amar Hekdesh, the one Rav Yonah who says that din applies to Hekdesh, Kol Shekein HaKarkos, he would say all the more so that it applies to Karka. Because really, why is it, Rashi says? Because when it comes to Hekdesh, Rashi uses the expression "afagav the lekatos klap ishmaya." You can't say the Eibishter, who is the owner of Hekdesh, has made a mistake. Obviously, it wasn't that he was overcharged by mistake, and yet we say that there can be bitul mekach. How much more so when it comes to selling karka to another person, where he could have easily misvalued the karka? For sure, there should be bitul mekach. So if we say that concept, the bitul mekach, applies to Hekdesh, all the more so it applies to a hedyot buying karka.
Not everything that applies to Hekdesh.
Wait, we're going to get back to that soon. But wait, but at least in this case, there's a logical reason to say that. Wait, Manda Amar, yeah, we'll see. Manda Amar Akakos, on the other hand, the opinion that says that this concept applies to Karka, to selling Karka to a Hediot, Avala Hekdesh is low. That opinion, Rav Yirmiyah would say that did not apply to Hekdesh. There is no Bitul Mekach when it comes to Hekdesh, according to that opinion, period. Why? Because that would be like what Shmuel said. The Omer Shmuel, Hekdesh, Shava Mana, Shachilla, Shava Prota, Mecholol. If you have Hekdesh, which is worth a Mana, 100 Zuz, and you redeemed it on something which is a Shava Prota, you're not supposed to do that. However, Mecholol, it is Mecholol. The Chilol has, to a certain extent, taken effect, which is what the Gemara is going to discuss now, a little bit, the pros and cons of that, but at least, if you take that as a given, then it means there's no Einah and no Bitul Mekach when it comes to Hekdesh.
Because that's
Shavah Mona and Shavah Prota. That's much more than B'kidei Einah. It's even more than Shavah Meyah B'Masayim, like Tosfos said, and yet you see that it works. So there you go. According to that opinion, neither Einah nor Bitul Mekach ever applies to Hekdesh. Whereas according to the other opinion, Bitul Mekach does apply to Hekdesh. If you overcharge Hekdesh or underpay the Hekdesh by more than a certain, by shtus or whatever fraction it is, and Bitul Mekach, it's a Bitul Mekach if it's more than that. There just wouldn't be enough if you did exactly the shtus. Yeah. So, to discuss this a little bit, Tanan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Tzemura, Im Hoya Kodesh Balmum, if you have an animal which was hektish, it was supposed to be a korban, but it's a balmum, yotza lecholid, then it goes and becomes cholin. So Rashi says that this is a continuation. The Mishnah starts out off as follows. You have one animal which is designated as a korban, and you take another one and say this one should be an exchange for that one, zu tmurat zu or whatever. Then you have what the pasuk says, v'hayohu tmurat yekodesh. Both of them now have kedusha as a korban, and you get malchus for having violated the mitzvah in the Torah, lo yachlefen v'lo yamiroise. On the other hand, if you were to say zu mcholelas al zu, I'm taking this animal and being mchalalas on this other one.
Instead of saying
I'm exchanging, you're saying I'm mechalal it. Well, if the original animal was a tumim, nothing happens because you can't be mechalal an animal which is a tumim. It's supposed to be brought as a carbon. That's a concept that we've learned a few times in over the years in our shir, that anything anything that's supposed to go to the Mizbeach, any yotzei min Mizbeach la'olam. It never, as long as it's able to be brought on the Mizbeach, it never leaves that. It can never lose that status. Unless something happens.
Same thing should apply to Tamura.
Tamura is a Xeris HaKosev, that the original one is Kodesh and the new one is also Kodesh. What we're saying is, if you were to say, so in other words, there's a few possibilities. If you say Zu Tmurat Zu, now both of them are Kodesh. If you say Zu Mechulelos Al Zu, it depends. Chilul can work, but only if this one is a Balmum. It can't work if this one is a Tamim, because there's no way to take the Kedusha off it. If this one is a Balmum, though, then
you take the one
which is hektish, which now developed in mum, and transfer it to kedusha. You're mechalal it. You're taking off the kedusha of it and transferring that kedusha. You're doing chilul onto another animal, which is a tamim.
Right.
Fine. So that works. Yotzal cholin imahaya kodesh balmum. If the animal which was originally kodesh is a balmum, and you do another one, is you're being mechalal it on another animal, as opposed to being meimur, which would be aser. Chilul you're allowed to do.
Transfer instead of exchange,
right? Yotzal l'chulin, the original animal, which is a balmum, goes out to chulin. The tzorach lasis l'idomim, however, you do have to figure out the actual value of the original animal and the value of the new animal, and make sure that's at least equal. So what does that mean? Amar Rav Yechonon, yotzal l'chulin d'var Torah, it means, Minat Torah, even if the new animal is not worth as much as the original one, the chilul still took effect. Fine, you now have a cholin animal, which is a balmum, and you have another animal, which has kedusha as a korban. However, midrabanan, you need to evaluate it to make sure that you're making a fair exchange. So Rabbi Yochanan would say, since our Mishnah says that a nah doesn't apply to hektish, that's what it means. So even if the second animal was worth less than the first one, it works. Minatarda. Midrabanan, we don't let you get away with it. Right? No, everybody agrees that no, I know for Hekdesh. The Mishnah says so. But a Shlokish on Achzarach Lachz Ledom Minatarda. Whereas your Shlokish says that no, you do have to evaluate it Minatarda, because Rashi says the Pasuk uses the expression over and over again in Parshas B'chol Kodesh when it talks about the dinim of Erchen and Hekdesh and whatever. A number of times over there, the Torah uses the word erkecha. You have to evaluate it. So Rabbi Yochanan understands it means, okay, any amount that you evaluate it, whether it's worth more or less, as long as it's something that has a value. Rish Lakish says it means you have to make sure it has the exact value. So therefore, Rish Lakish would say, Minat Torah, you have to make sure the new animal is worth at least as much as the old one. So the question is, Ramayef Sinan, what's the scenario over here? Ilema v'kadeyayna, are you talking about that the difference in value between the old animal, which is balmum, and the new one, which you're being mechalalit on, is the kedeya na, is that the difference is 1/6, the difference is shtus, which is the fraction for na, as we've said before. What do you mean? Beholdem Rish Lakish Tzorach Lasis L'Damim D'Var Torah. Why would Rish Lakish say that you have to evaluate it Minat Torah, and if it's worth a sixth less, then it doesn't work? Why not? Anah works when it comes to Hekdesh. But now we learned in our Mishnah, Elu Dvarim She'en Lahem Anah, Ha'avot HaKakoris, Ha'avotim Ha'ashtoris Ha'ekdeshim. So if the difference is, if the original animal is worth 120, and the new animal is worth 100, which is a difference of Shtus, what's the problem, according to Rish Lakish? Fine, you did Anah. Anah doesn't apply to Hekdesh. Why should we say that? Tzorach Lasis L'Damim, and if it's worth 20 less, then you've got a problem.
Means
that you have to evaluate it, and if it's not worth as much, then the chivul doesn't work unless you're going to make up the difference. Well, why ever not? Ela bitul mekach. So you're talking about if the difference is more than 20%, that then you're saying that bitul mekach applies. Then the question comes on Rav Yechonon. Why would he say that in that case only midrabanan do you have to evaluate it? Well, Amar Rav Yonah Hakdeshes, Rav Yimiya Amar Kakos. But we just said before, a few lines ago, that Rav Yonah said that the concept that we said that Bitzel Mekach applies does apply to Hekdesh. Rav Yimiya Amar Kakos, whereas Rav Yimiya said it applies to Karka. Both of them are saying that Rav Yochanan said that Anah doesn't apply to Hekdesh, but Bitzel Mekach does. So according to Rabbi Yirmiyah, According to Rabbi Yirmiyah, that it applies only to Kavka, fine, it's not a problem. But according to Rabbi Yonah, who understands Rabbi Yochanan to be saying that Bittul Mekach does apply to Hekdesh, well then, that's a Midoraisa level. Why would he say only Midrabanan? You have to make up the difference. And Midoraisa it would work. The answer is, La'olam b'bitul mekach. No, okay, we will say that it is talking about bitul mekach. We will talk about that the new animal is worth less than 5/6, less than 5/6 of what the original animal was worth. So the original one is 120. The new one is worth only 90. Let's say. In which case, if it was a head yet bitul mekach would apply. The recipient of the buyer would have the ability to cancel the whole sale and get back his 90 and give back the animal. You can flip around the opinions that Rish Lakish would be the one who says that Minat Torah works and only Midrabanan do you have to make it up, and Rabbi Yochanan would be the one who says that even Minat Torah doesn't work, which would fit with what Rabbi Yonah is saying, that Rabbi Yochanan understands that Bittul Mekach does apply to Hekdesh. In which case, we would have to say, what is the underlying machloikas? What is the underlying machlokas? Whether we would say bittul mekach applies to hekdesh or not? Because that's what we're saying. If we're saying between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, one holds that hekdesh is able to do bittul mekach, and the other one holds that not. What's the logical underpinning for that? Which, after all, like Rashi said before, lekatos klapishmai. You can't say that the Hashem has made a mistake and undervalued or overvalued the thing, and yet we want to argue that bittul mekach applies. Like the gizbar standing in for Hashem has the ability to say, you know what, I made a mistake over here. We got to cancel this transaction. Well, why? But the Hashem is the owner of the hektish. The gizbar is doing it as a shliach.
Yeah.
Okay. No. So the machlokas is like this. Bidishmuel, they're arguing over the point that Shmuel said, Da'ama Shmuel, which we just said before, that Shmuel, thank you, we just said before, Shmuel said, Hekdesh shavah mana shechilla shavah frotzim mechol, that if you take Hekdesh, which is worth a mana, which is worth 100 zuz, and a mechalalit on a shavah frotzim mechol, then it works, the chilul has taken effect. Therefore, mar islay dishmuel, or mar leslay dishmuel. So, one opinion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish holds of Shmuel, therefore he says that goes to show bittul mekach doesn't apply to Hekdesh. The other opinion says that not. So the way we had it originally is Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says midaraisa it works, he's the one who would hold of what Shmuel says. Rish Lakish would be disagreeing with that. Rish Lakish would say, such a thing does not work. If you mechalal Hekdesh shava mana on a prutta, it doesn't work because he holds bittul mekach. According to what we said, Epoch, it would be the other way around.
It doesn't matter that there's such a difference between...
According to Shmuel, not. I mean, we're not saying we can do it l'chatchila, but, we're going to talk about in a second. But at least for the moment, we're assuming that's fine. Shmuel is saying it's a b'dievedik thing. By the way, nowadays it's a l'chatchiladik thing. If somebody declares something hektish, then he's, or for that matter, Ma'ase Sheni, you're allowed to be mechalal even on a shavah prutah, no matter how much it is, because the fact of the matter is we don't have a basic mikdash to give it to. You don't want. It's going to be a lot of money, and then you may end up using it, and then you have a problem with me'ilah. So therefore, l'chatchila be mechalal on shavah prutah, and that way it's less likely that a prutah is something easy to destroy, and that way you're not going to have a problem.
We couldn't do that if we had a basic
mikdash. Obviously, we're told, yeah. So if you have a basic mikdash, then Shmuel is saying you can do it, but it's, yeah. This is, by the way, discusses over here that even if we're saying that yotza l'chulin, not necessarily does it mean that you never have to make up the amount afterwards. You still will have to make up the amount, at least midrabanan. We're talking about whether at least before you do that, whether the chilul takes effect. Or another possibility, it's kolam isla d'Shmuel. Maybe both Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish do agree with Shmuel's din. Yes, you are able to imchalal a shavah mana of hekdesh on a shavah prata. But the machlokas would be as follows: Mar sava shechilalay ein lachatchilalay. The one opinion says when he says shechilalay means if you did it, then fine, it works b'di'evet. But not l'chatchila, you're supposed to figure out the actual amount. That would be the opinion that originally we attributed to Rish Lakish, that we said, Sorech Lassus Leidom Minatoda. Minatoda, you do have to evaluate it and make sure that they're at least equal or at least within Bechdei Eino or whatever. If you didn't, then fine, but the evidence works. Whereas the other opinion would say that even lachchila you're able to do it, so you will have to pay afterwards. That is true, but at least to take off the issur from the original animal, you will be able to do that even if you didn't evaluate it, even if it's worth much less. You won't say bittlmek.
You'll just have to just machal it, and then afterwards.
And then afterwards you'll pay the difference. But meanwhile, the first animal will have already become whole.
And now
that there's
no
case to make it. Then you can do that. Or yet another possibility. Maybe you could answer that after all, we are talking about that the difference in value between the original animal, which became a balmum, and the new one, which you're being mechaled on. Maybe the difference is that the difference is indeed 20%. So then, what do we asked before in that case? Then why does Rish Lakish say that you have to lock sodok lasses ledomim? We said in our Mishnah ein lahem ayna, because the loy tepuch. Furthermore, we should say you don't have to flip around Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish's opinion. Or Rav Chista kamitzagi. Namely, they could be arguing about what Rav Chista says. Da'amer my ein lahem ayna ein betodas ayna. Rav Chista says the other way around. This that we're saying, that Einah doesn't apply to Hekdesh, he says it means that the whole din of Einah does not apply to them in the sense that even if the difference was less than Einah, so in other words, Fakir. Yeah. Up until now we were assuming Einah la Hekdesh means if you underpaid Hekdesh by 20%, then it still works, and maybe if you did more than that, does Hekdesh have the ability to do Bittul Mekach or not? Now we're saying, your Chista is saying the other way around. On the contrary, Ein Lahem Eino, when it comes to Hekdesh, means that Hekdesh has the ability to cancel the sale or get refunded or whatever, even if the amount was less than Eino, even if the amount was less than 20%. And what's the logic for that? One thing is, the Rosh gives
that
one...
doesn't follow the rules of Ana.
Right, it doesn't follow the rules of Ana. In other words, it's stricter. It's stricter. Up until now, we were assuming Hekdesh is more lenient. We're saying maybe it's stricter. One reason for the logic, the Rosh says, is because when it comes to two Hevyotas, you have the ability to be Meichel. You have the ability to say, okay, you know, I was overcharged, but fine, I'm still willing to allow the sale to stand. I just want my money back. You can't say the Eivishter is Meichel. So therefore, there's
even
a loss. Even less than a sixth. He's a shliach, though. A shliach does not have the ability to just do things unilaterally. As a matter of fact, actually, the Gemara mentions in some places that if you sent a shliach to sell something for you, for example, and he sold it for less than the proper amount, you can void the sale even if it was less than the kedai no, because the takuni shtarchich of lela avsi, I sent you as a shliach to do good, not to mess things up. The takuni shtarchich, I sent you to fix things up, to do things the right way, lela avsi, not to mess up. You don't have
brought that in that.
Yes, so you are not my shliach if you're not doing the right thing. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, the point is, therefore, so we have the statement of Rav Chista that fakir, not that Hekdesh is more lenient than selling to a hedyot, but rather it's more chomer, that even if it's less than the kedai na, the sale can be voided. Well, very well. Rav Yechon and Rish Lakish can be arguing whether we accept that point or not. Rish Lakish would be saying we do. Therefore, he's saying even if it's the kedai na, even if the difference between the old animal and the new animal is exactly 20%, or maybe even it's less than 20%, you still have, it's still no good. Tzorech lachas ledomim minatoda. Minatoda, you have to figure out the actual values and make sure that they're even. And Rabbi Yechonon would say, I don't hold of this concept of Rav Chista. Ein lahem ayna means what we assumed all along. It means that if you overcharged Hekdesh or underpaid Hekdesh or whatever by 20%, there is no din of ayna. What's done is done. Therefore, minatoda. Well, that's because that's another way of understanding ein lahem ayna. Again, ein lahem ayna is an equivocal statement. It can mean that, it can mean lakula, that Hekdesh does not have the ability to get repaid, at least midaraisa, for Aina. Or you could say the other way, right? Ein lahem ayna means ein lahem betardas ayna, that even less than that, yeah. Yeah. So they could be arguing about whether we accept Rav Chisda's understanding. Right. That would be the machlokes. Okay. The Gemara says Meisvi. Okay, you're telling me.
But if you say En Lina Na'a, you would tend to think that it includes the cases where it's even less than a Chisda.
You would tend to think, but that's, you have two different possible ways.
How is it explained?
Ein lahena na can mean ein lahena na exactly what it sounds like, right. But the din of na doesn't apply, and we can argue whether bittul mekach applies or not.
Yeah,
or we can say ein lahena na means the whole concept that there is a threshold of na doesn't apply. There is no threshold, any amount is na. Okay, the Gemara says Meisvi. Okay, I have a contradiction, though. You're telling me, Rav Chisda, that hektish in that sense is more chomer than a hedget, that ana, that even less than the threshold, than the normal threshold for ana, still doesn't work when you're dealing with hektish. But a brisa says ribis v'ana lehedget, the dinim of ribis, which we will discuss in the next parak, and the dinim of ana apply to a hedget, the ein ribis v'ana lehektish. But the dinim of ribis and the dinim of ana do not apply to hektish. What we mean by ribis to hektish, we're going to discuss soon. But for the time being, let's take the brisa as given. So, therefore, you see, the brisa seems to pretty clearly be saying that ribis, that ona does not apply to hektish.
Ribis or ona.
In other words, it sounds like we're saying a hedyot is not allowed to pay ribis or take ribis. A hedyot is not allowed to do ona, and if he does, then he has to refund the money. But when it comes to hektish, the dinim of ribis and the dinim of ona don't apply. So therefore, even if you overcharged or underpaid hektish by more than 1/6, then you're still good. Why? What do you think? The Braise is any stronger than the Mishnah? Do Kim the Torah say no? We explain that according to the Chista, that when the Mishnah says Ein Lahem Ein Na, when it comes to hektish, means Ein the Torah say no, that the threshold, the normal threshold of Ein Na does not apply. Even less than that threshold, the hektish is still entitled to a refund. Well, Hachinami Ribis V'Dinai Na LaHedyot V'Ein Ribis V'Dinai Na LaHektish. Fine. When the Braise says Ein Na, maybe it means Din Ein Na. This concept that you have less than a sixth or more than a sixth, those things don't apply to hektish. Any difference in value has to be refunded to hektish. Maybe that's what the Braisa means, same as the Mishnah. Okay. The Gemara says, Yihachi. Instead of saying that it means that you can get away with underpaying hektish, even if it's a shtus, say it the other way around, that it means you can't get away by underpaying hektish by any amount. Okay, the Gemara says, "Yehochi, Heiner de Katani Sefer." If you're gonna explain the Braisa that way, look at the next. Then what do you mean, Heiner de Katani Sefer? What do you mean? Well, then what does it mean that it says in the Sefer, "Zeh Chomer beHedyot beHektish"? What does it mean? The Braisa continues, "This is a Chomra as far as a Hedyot over Hektish." So if you say that it means that, like we assumed originally, that it means that even if you underpaid Hektish, you still don't have to refund it. Fine, that's what it means. In other words, when it comes to a Hedyot, you have that Chomra, you would have to. When it comes to hektish, you don't have to. But if you're saying that it means fakir, if you underpaid hektish by 10%, you still have to make it up. Whereas with a hedyot, that would be, the 10% is less than a shtus. So therefore, it would be mechila, like we learned earlier in the parak. Fakir, then it comes out hektish is more chomer than a hedyot. What does the braisa mean then? Well, okay, I'm giving 10% as a round figure. I mean, 1/6, we said, whatever. Yeah, 20%, yeah.
Well, we said, okay.
The answer is Aribis. The answer is fine. Maybe the Braisa only means that there's a Chumrah in a Hedyot over Hektish when it comes to Ribis. Maybe the Braisa doesn't mean that both things, Ribis and Ana, Hedyot has a Chumrah over Hektish. Maybe it means only one of them, Ribis.
Why can't you say it's either one or the other?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out.
If it's not one, it has to be the other.
Right. But that's what we're saying. In other words, maybe the Braisa is telling us there are two dinim that are different in a hedyot than a hektish. One of them is ribis, the other one is ena. One of them, namely ribis, you have a chumra of a hedyot over hektish, where a hedyot is not allowed to charge or pay ribis, and hektish, as we will see soon, is. But on the other hand, when it comes to Ona, maybe not. Maybe the Braisa is not talking about the respective chumras. Okay, the Gemara says, "Lusni nami zechomer behedyot behektish behedyot." I know. fine, if that's the case, the Braisa should have clarified. It should have said, in as far as these two things, you have one of them where Hedyot has a Chumra over Hektish, namely as far as it exists, and you have the other one, Ona, where Hektish has a Chumra over Hedyot. Namely, that by a Hedyot, if you're underpaid by 10%, nothing happens. He was Merkel. But by Hektish, it wouldn't work, like Rechista is saying. If that's what it means, then the Braisa should clarify. One of them is Hedyot is stronger than Hektish. The other one, Hektish has a stronger position than a Hedyot. The Gemara says, Hachi Hashta, what kind of a question is that? Bishlem is a Chomer beHedyot and beHektish betuloi. I can understand why the Braisa would have to be telling us that Ribis, a Hedyot has a stronger position, is more Chomer than Hektish, because it means Zeh, only in that case, betuloi. There is no other case. Ala Hektish, Zeh Chomer betuloi. What do you mean? What would you mean? If you said that when it comes to Einah, Hektish is more stringent than Hedyot, namely, any amount that you underpay Hektish, you have to make up. You'd say, Zeh Chomer beHektish over Hedyot. This is the Chomer of Hektish over Hedyot. Is that the only one? There's a lot of things in which Hektish is more Chomer than a Hedyot. You use something of Hektish by mistake. You have a carbon mealer. You use something else of somebody else's. So therefore, in other words, There would have been no reason, even if we understand Ein Lahem Einah, the way that Rav Chista is understanding it, to mean that Ein in Betodas Einah, no matter how little you're underpaid Hektish, you still have to make it up. There's no reason for the Braisa to say, Zeh Chomer beHektish beHedyot. This is a Chomer of Hektish over Hedyot. We know there's a lot of Chomeres of Hektish over Hedyot. This happens to be one of them. So therefore, yes, when the Braisa says, Zeh Chomer beHedyot beHektish, it may well be talking only about Ribis. You don't have to say that it's talking about Einah, and you can't understand the Braisa the way Rav Chista is understanding.
That's
the
final conclusion.
Well, the halacha is in the end, given that we said before that Shmuel said Hektish Shava Mana Shechila Ashava Prota Mecholo, then it means our original understanding, the original understanding of the Stam of the Gemara is correct. That Einah does not apply to Hektish. Even if you were mechalal something of Hektish on something much much lesser in value, min haTorah the chilul takes effect. Midrabanan, you'll have to make up the difference. Okay, now we mentioned in the Braisa that Ribis applies to a Hedyot, but it doesn't apply to a Hektish. So we got to ask Ribis to Hektish Hechidami. What's the scenario that we're talking about that Ribis that involves Hektish? Ilema de Oisfe.
In general.
Well, we have to figure out what are the case. What are the case involving money of Hektish where you're going to have Ribis? Ilema de Oisfe Gizber Meir B'Meir V'Astrim. Are we talking about, for example, that the Gizber, the treasurer of the Beis Mikdash, took a $100 of Hektish and lent it to somebody on the condition that the person is going to repay $120?
To Hektish.
And you're saying that Hektish is allowed to do that? Why? Valay Mala Gizber. Why? Hektish, the Gizber has no business lending out money of Hektish. As soon as he takes that money and lends it out to somebody else, he's taken it out to Cholin. At that point, he took out money from Hektish. He didn't put in anything in return instead of it. That's what we're asking.
We're asking if he can do it for 120. But
no. In other words, the only way you can take money out of Hektish is if you mechalal it on something. If you're taking out that money and exchanging it for goods or services or what have you. But if you're just taking money from Hektish and lending it out, that's me'ila, exactly. As soon as you do me'ila, the kivin shemal a gizbo, yotam a'isav l'cholin, as soon as the gizbo is committed me'ila, the money becomes cholin, b'havalu hudadiyah. Now it's not money of Hektish anymore. It's money of a Hedyot. It's considered now the Gizbo's own 100, which he's now responsible to repay Hektish later on. And of course he himself can't lend at Ribis. So what are we talking about? Where is there a scenario where there could conceivably be Ribis and Hektish that we're saying to the thing is allowed?
Money of Hektish is intrinsically Hektish. They can't make a loan to somebody.
Whether it's Machsa Shekel, whether it's money that was donated to the Beis Mikdash directly, whether it's money that was something else of Hektish was sold and this money was raised, yeah. The only way to take out money from Hektish is if you're being mechalal on something, yeah, if you're exchanging, yeah. Rav Hoshea hocha ma'iskinen, so Rav Hoshea says, I'll tell you what the scenario is over here. We're not talking about, when we say en ribis la hektish, we're not talking about a plain old case of lending out money at interest. We're talking about a case which actually is only osim midrabbanan. We're talking about, for example, where one of the suppliers to this nefesh agreed that he is going to be supply, for example, flour to the Bismithesh at the rate of 4 sa'a to a seller, but under Mishalosh, and now price has changed, and now it's 3 sa'a to the seller. Now, we're going to learn in the next parak at great length that between Hadyotis, you can't make a deal in advance that I'm going to sell you X amount of produce or flour or what have you for X amount unless you have one of two conditions. One of them is Yotza Hashar. If there's a known prevailing price, then you can make deals based on that existing price. Or number two, Yeshlo, you have something which is called, you have some of that kind of thing in stock already, then you're allowed to make conditions that I'm gonna sell you some in advance. We'll be learning about those in a few days.
Can I stipulate about prices?
In other words, classic case, for example, is if we have I don't have any wheat in my possession right now. And it's not Yotza Hashar. The prices for wheat are still all over the map. Yotza Hashar means that there's a stabilized price. But before that, I can't say, for example, I'm making a deal that I'm going to buy wheat from you at $10 a bushel when there's a possibility that I'll pay you for it in advance when there is the possibility that later on the prices may fluctuate. The prices may now be $12 a bushel, and now I'm getting more wheat for having given you the money earth. That would be also midrabanan.
Because
it's similar to ribbit. It's called agar. We'll learn about it in the next paragraph. It's called agar netter.
It's called hedging.
It's called agar netter. It's called I'm paying you more for the. I'm giving you more for the fact that you're waiting for your payment, basically. Or in this case, the other way around. I, the buyer of the wheat, I'm going to be getting more from you than I would have otherwise because I didn't make you deliver the wheat right now. I was willing to wait for it for later. Midrabanan, such a thing is awful. However, when it comes to hektish, such a thing is allowed. So therefore, if I agreed with hektish that I'm going to supply them flour for the korban for the menachos at 4 sa'ah to the seller. Now prices have gone up. Now a seller will only buy you 3 sa'ah of grain, and the din is I still have to supply 4. Kedetanya, as we learn in a braisa, it's actually most of this is a mishnah. In between Hadyotis, it would be Ribis to Rabbanon, yes.
Even if I can find a place where it's supplied to me at 3?
Unless Yotza Hashar, unless there's a prevailing price, or unless Yeshloi, unless the supplier already has some in stock, which he could have given now, if neither of those things apply, then no. Here, Hektish doesn't have a supply. Not Hektish, the vendor doesn't have flour right now that he could have supplied right now at 4 sa to the seller. It's not Yotza Hashar, because you see prices are still fluctuating. Sometimes it's 3, sometimes it's 4. Between Hadyotis, such a thing would be Osir. With Hektish, it's Mutter. And Hektish is going to be entitled to get that extra sa, even though if they were right now buying it on the open market, they would have had to pay more, because I made a contract with them in advance.
Yeah,
depends when
you have to buy it at 3 and have to sell it
back
to anything at 4
and take a loss. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. But if there's a way, and there are today, to anticipate such fluctuations, that prices are higher in the winter than the
Yotza Hashar, we need there to be a prevailing price that's going to be fixed for a certain amount of time. We'll learn about it in the next day. Wait, have a little patience. We'll get to Ezer Neshach in a few days.
It's never stable forever.
It's never stable forever. It has to be stable for a certain period of time.
Any translations into rent if you do a 10-year lease?
Rentals are a little bit different. Karkas, we'll deal with that in the next paragraph. We'll see how it happens.
Can you just provide a short answer on the amount of time that it means for Shah
for the season, basically. For the season. Onward. Kidatanya, as we learn in a Braisa, or it's actually really a Mishnah in Shkaldim, Hamakabal all of the Sapik Slosis Mehaber, if somebody accepted on himself, he entered a contract with Hektish that he will supply flour for the Bet Mikdash at 4 sa to the seller, but under Mishalish, and now prices go up, and now a seller will only buy you 3 sa'a of flour, misapik me'aba. He still has to supply them at 4 sa'a to the seller and take the loss. And the other way around, mishalish v'omda me'aba, the other way around, if he said, if at the time he made the contract, they were going 3 sa'a to the seller, and now it's 4, misapik me'aba, he still has to supply 4. Shiyad hektish alo yona, hektish always has the upper hand, so therefore we see, in other words, even though midrabbanon, this would be a case of ribis, because it's hektish, it's allowed. That's what we mean when we said before, ein ribis, when we said before, ribis v'ayna lehediyat, ein ribis v'ayna lehektish, that's what we mean. That hektish is allowed to enter into such contracts, even though if it was a hediyat in place of hektish, it would be, yes. So even though if it was not hektish, but rather a hediyat, it would be also midrabbanon. But because it's hektish, it's allowed.
How can we say, actually, this is what it means? We say there's no ribis for hekdesh, but in the same exact scenario, there's ribis for hediyot.
That's what we mean. Ein ribis v'inol the hediyot, ein ribis v'inol the hektish. That's what it means. That if a hediyot did such a thing, it would be ribis midrabbanon. If hektish does it, it's not. It's allowed.
Whatever is the change, instead of going up, it goes down.
That's what we just said. We said both possibilities. Either way, hektish always gets the better deal. Yeah. Rapapa says you don't need all of that. You could actually be talking about a case of ribis d'oraisa. We just said if you took money out of hektish and lent it out, then you committed an ila at that point. We could be talking about hocha ba'avne binyan hamasuris legizber askinin. We could be talking about that. We're not talking about lending out money, but rather we're talking about stones. That you have stones that were designated for the building of, or the renovation of the Bais Mikdash.
So this case.
We mentioned it briefly. We're talking about actual stones that have been handed over to the Gizbar, but have not yet been built into the Bais Mikdash. Kiddush Shmuel, and therefore the reason why it works is like Shmuel said. The Amar Shmuel, Bonin B'Chol Ba'Chakas Machdishin. Shmuel says that when they're building in the Bais Mikdash, when they build buildings of Hektish, they don't directly go and buy the stones and all the building materials from money of Hektish. Because what happens, for example, while you're building, let's say you may want to sit on the stone, relax for a little bit. If the stone at that point belongs to Hektish, you'll have committed Me'ila.
Because you're using it.
What do you do, therefore? Rashi says, you buy them on credit. You buy them on credit. You build them into the wall. Once they're built into the wall, then you take money of Hektish and exchange it for what's already been built into the wall.
You pay the supplier after it's built in.
And Rashi says similarly, let's say a person brings an actual stone to build in the Bais Mikdash, same thing, he doesn't yet declare it Hektish until it's actually built into the wall. So therefore, there's no Me'ila yet. It's not Hektish yet. But we're saying that nevertheless ribis would not apply to it because it's something that is going to become hektish. So therefore that explains that the gizbar hasn't committed me'ila, because it's not actually hektish yet, but it is about to become hektish, and therefore it hasn't been declared hektish, so it would not be ribis. Because there's no me'ila yet, because it's not actually hektish. But if the gizbar takes
it, there should be ribis.
Because that's what we're saying, not ribis v'inol hadit, ven ribis v'inol hektish. Because this is something which was given to hektish and is being built and
it's going to be. Well, going to be is
okay.
Enough.
But that's what we're saying. It is enough.
What
same thing, Rashi says that he gives them to the builder. He doesn't actually call them hektish until they're built into the building. Which, by the way, you know, we learned a few days ago that hektish can't be mischalal on karka. So Tosfos asks, how does that fit over here?
Right.
You're saying over here that once it's built in, then you're taking the money and being mechalal on it. So Tosfos says because, first of all, it's something which was originally detached from the ground. So it's not really totally considered karka. Or even if you say it is, the fact is, if it never became kaddish, you would end up taking it out of the wall. Therefore, it can be considered tolerish until it's actually paid for. can be considered.
Well, now we're getting the reverse answer. We're saying before we're saying Hekdesh still doesn't have ribis, and now we're saying for Hekdesh, even though it's not karka, since it's going to be incorporated in the wall, it's going to be considered karka. So
it's sort of in limbo at this point. It's not totally hektish yet because it hasn't been paid for. On the other hand, you're able to make it hektish by paying for it, even though it's already in the wall, because if it wasn't going to be paid for, it would be taken out of the wall.
So that's the thing.
It's sort of in limbo over here.
Yeah, it's really in limbo.
Okay, but that's how it is. That's what we're saying. By the way, there's a Tosfos elsewhere, I think in on this Gemara in Me'ilah, that gives another practical reason why it's good to wait until the stone is actually built into the wall before being mechallel it. The other reason is because that way you can also be mechallel not only on the stone but also on the wages of the people who built it. Otherwise, if you're going to be mechallel on the stone ahead of time, what are you being mechallel on their wages? To be mechallel money of hektish, you need to be mechallel on actual goods, not on services.
Right.
But like this, when it's already included in the stone, then you can already.
The stones that we find today near the Kesel, the excavations, they are considered hekdesh.
It's not so simple, actually, especially because there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah and a couple of other places that says kiven shabobo peritzim chivelua, that once the goyim entered the Beis Mikdash and took it over, they were mechallel at that point. It loses its kedusha as far as the dinim of Me'ilah. It is true that you're not allowed to take out stones from the kosel for a different reason. You're not allowed to destroy anything that represents Hashem. Same idea, you're not allowed to erase the name of Hashem, etc. But as far as Me'ilah, not necessarily would Me'ilah apply.
And even if they've never been found by the goyim, they're excavated.
Because they were knocked off the coastal by the goyim. So yeah, they were part of the building.
The coastal, but areas around the coastal.
Whatever, the point is that, if it's around the coastal, then it was never part of the Beis Mikdash in the first place. Okay. Yeah. All right. Onward. The Mishnah said, "En ben tashlumi keiku." We said that the four things mentioned in our Mishnah, avodim, shtoris, kakois, avodim, shtoris, and ekdeshes, all those things we said, besides that, the dinim of oinah don't apply to them, as we've just discussed. Also, tashlumi keiku doesn't apply to them if you stole them. So the Gemara says, "Minani mili." How do we know that? Like this, the Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. The pasuk says, "Al kol dvar pesha klal." The pasuk says about the dinim of when it talks about the dinim of keiful, specifically when it's talking about it in connection with a shomer, the pasuk says, "Al kol dvar pesha," for anything where he may have been careless, that is a klal. Al shura chamor al sel salmo. The pasuk continues, if it was an ox or a donkey or a sheep or a garment, that is prat. Al kol aveda asher yomer. Then the pasuk continues, anything which was lost, which the shomer claims that it was stolen, and it turns out that not, he kept it for himself, where then he has to pay keiful. Chaz of a kol, that's another klal. Therefore, klal of prat, klal yatadon elakena prat. The yud gemaritis, yeah. Ma prat meforish dover amatalto gupri mamin. The prat, the four things in the prat, shur, chamur, ser, and salma, are all things which are movable and have an intrinsic value. I've called dover amatalto gupri mamin. Therefore, it has to be that anything else to which tashlume kefil applies has to be something movable where it has intrinsic value. Therefore, yotze karkor is shenim metalplin. So therefore, that excludes karka because not metalplin, it's not movable. Yotze avodim shokshlo karkor. We exclude avodim because you have the hekesh between them and karka. Like the chalta moisam l'reshes achuzah. So they're like on achuzah. They're like a land holding. Yotze shtoris shafpish metalplin and grupam mamin. We also exclude shtoris because even though they're movable, they themselves are not mamin. The mamin is the amount that's written in them, which is an intangible thing. What? Yeah, well, the actual paper itself has a value, but you're not selling it for the paper, you're selling it for the rice. And hekdeshes, so that's why we exclude those three. And why hekdeshes? Amakro re'ehu, because the pasuk continues over there. Yishalem shnayim re'ehu. You pay cable to his friend, meaning re'ehu v'lo hekdesh, only to his friend, not hekdesh. So therefore, that's how we see that all those four things are excluded from tashlumi cable. Okay. V'lo tashlumi dalav v'heichol. We said that also tashlumi abav v'chamisha doesn't apply to any of them. If somebody stole an animal of hekdesh, for example, and shechted it, he won't have to pay tashlumi dalav v'heich. Why not? Tashlum my time. Tashlum. Now, when it comes to Tashlum Dalad Behe, when it comes to the pasuk doesn't say any of these miyotim. You don't have a call of prophet file there. You don't have anything about Re'ehu. So why not? Because Tashlum Dalad Behe, Amar Rachmana, V'lo Tashlum Shlosh of Abba. We have the Svara and Bava Kama. The Torah says you have to pay four or five fold if it was a sheep or an ox, respectively. Not that you should ever have to pay three or four. Hey, in other words, what do you say? When you pay, when for example, when you steal a sheep and shecht it, and you're paying four times, what it means is you're paying kafel, plus you're paying another two times for the fact that you shechted the sheep. If you were to say that, we said before that kafel, that hektish is excluded from kafel. If you were to say that you have to pay the shlomah above a chamisha, what it would mean is you're paying the original value, you're paying another two times for the fact that you shechted it, comes out, you're paying only threefold. But the Torah says four or five fold. There's no such thing.
One plus two times.
Plus two times, and that's threefold.
And then four and five.
You're paying one. You're paying the original amount, kfold, and then two more times.
Three,
which is two so far. The original amount, kfold, which is two,
and then
two more, and then two more if it was a sheep, or three more if it was an ox. If you were to say that, fine, hektish, you don't pay kfold, but you have to pay the shlomah above a chamisha, it would mean that effectively you're paying only three times at the value of the sheep, and because you didn't pay the kafel. And that's not what the Torah says. Four for a sheep, five for an ox, not three for a sheep and four for an ox. So if you have no tashlum kafel, automatically you have no tashlum abav
chamisha.
And therefore the whole thing is canceled. Okay. Then we said, shemechinam enim nishbachola. We said that a shemechinam would not have to swear on any case involving kauka or avadim or hektish. Menani, on any of these four things. Menani, how do we know that? Same kind of thing, same kind of limit. The Tanan Rabbanan, Ki Yitin Isha Re'eu Klal. The pasuk starts by saying, by a Shem Achinam, if a person gives to another person, that is Klal, that's a general thing, anything that he gives him. Kesef a Kalim Prat, it says that he gives him money or Kalim, that is a Prat. The pasuk continues with Gunav Mibetza Ish, and it was stolen from his house. Chaz of a Kalal, that's another Klal, that was anything that could be stolen. Again, Klal of Prat, a Klal, he has to Dhamma Elekena Prat. Ma Prat Mechurish Dover on the house of a Gufay Moment. Again, the Prat. Silver or kalim is something which is metalin and has intrinsic value. Akol davar metalin a gufin mammon. Again, yotze karkar is chain metalin, so therefore excluding karka, but not metalin. Yotze avadim shorok shlo karkar. Yotze shtaris shapish metalin and gufin mammon. Hekdeshes amakro re'eu v'loy shal hekdesh. Same kind of limud. Therefore, those four things are excluded. It's based on a different pasuk, but the same limud, the same klal of prat, the klal is that. And then when we say that a shema sacher would not have to pay if any of these things were lost or stolen, minani mili. How do we know that? Same thing. The Tanan Rabbanan kiyit in isha re'eu klal by shema sacher. The next parasha again. The Torah starts by saying that a person gives to somebody else, which is klal. Chamur eshor re'eh. He says he gives him a donkey or an ox or a sheep. Krat b'chol behema lishma chazur klal. Then when it says he gives him any animal to watch, that is another klal. Again, we have three psukim, one for each of these things, one for Teshlomei Kefal, one for Shema Chinam, one for Shema Sachar, and each of them we use a Kala Prat Kala and learn the same thing that these four things are excluded.